I'm using only studies from the National Library of Medicine. This study is about two different medical hospitals in Tunisia, and they want to see what happens when someone tests positive for COVID, and you give them, one, you give a placebo, an inert sugar pill, but the other, you give them multiple vitamin and minerals with extra melatonin and extra zinc. Well, what they found in this randomized double-blind study was that 100% of the people given the multiple vitamin and mineral were able to recover. No side effects. Good news. And also go back 3.5 years ago when we presented two separate studies. You can go to GaryNoll.com, go to articles, look under COVID, and you'll see these. Building up the immune system will help anybody with any condition. How well you build it up and what you're using to build it up will then be the determining factor of how protected you are. I have people in this audience who use that information, where we used high dose of vitamin D3 and zinc and quercetin, vitamin C, astragalus, the herb, patiarco, and to really fortify the immune response. Well, and we did several of those articles. Now, I have people say, you know, Gary, I tested positive for COVID, but I had no symptoms whatsoever. And other people say, I began to get sick, went on the protocol, fine, got right through it. Well, imagine now we're also exposed to common viruses that cause influenza, colds. Why not just be taking these kind of protocols on a daily basis? They're all good. From the University of Nebraska, they have an interesting study about starches. Common starches, meaning refined carbohydrates, like corn and rice and wheat, and versus the complex, where you have the whole brown rice and the whole wheat. And they say that once you eat a refined carbohydrate, a starch, it is adverse to your gut bacteria, where if you eat a whole complex carbohydrate, a whole starch, it's good. So the takeaway message is simple. Eat unrefined grains, all right, brown rice, millet, quinoa, but don't eat the refined. Don't eat the sugar-coated cereals, because that will not help. A really important study has just come out of Johns Hopkins School of Public Health, and it's about mothers who, because of depression, were taking antidepressants, and mainly the SSRIs, the selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, which we've also seen recently are not the be-all and end-all of helping people. But here's what was found, and this is really important, that those mothers who were pregnant, who took the SSRIs, they end up with some horrific side effects, potentially causing autism in children. And one of the reasons then they're saying, quote, think twice before taking them. And about 1/3 of autistic children have elevated levels of serotonin. And by the way, I'm sure many of you know that serotonin is a neurotransmitter. And it's one of the things we have to have in balance so we have good moods. It regulates our ability to focus and feel good. And it's the main target of the largest class of antidepressants known as SSRIs. So they're saying in this article, it's going to adversely, could adversely affect your child, ending up with autism. And for those of you who have dementia or Alzheimer's or know someone who does, there's no medicine that we're aware of that can reverse it, but there are natural techniques that can make a huge difference. And one of these was shown to come from the Medicinal Plant Research Center in the United Kingdom, and it's called sage. Now, we know about sage because it's been used for thousands of years because of its healing powers. And by the way, rosemary, a cousin of sage, is very similar. And it helps boost memory and cognition. It's in the same mint family, and it has volatile oils. It has flavonoids. It has phenolic acids. And all of these boost your health. And these phenolic acids are what is the protective role they have against oxidative damage, oxidative stress, and that can lead to coronary heart disease, stroke, and cancers. So what they found was at the University of Newcastle in Northumbria that sage oil against a placebo worked. So it's really, especially with word recall, those who took the placebo, it didn't, but those who took this, it did. From Sunyer Biomedical Research Institute, as well as the University of Barcelona, both in Spain, an article published in the current issue of Clinical Nutrition. If you have a carotene-rich diet, that's your mixed rainbow vegan diet, lots of yellow, red, dark green vegetables and fruits, it can lower the level of fat accumulating in your arteries. Now, there is one type of fat that's really, really bad. It's called the LDL, low-density lipoprotein cholesterol, and it adheres to the inner walls of the blood vessels. Over time, it builds up. It's especially frequent in people who gain weight, and it creates a form of atherosclerotic plaques that causes your arteries and blood vessels to narrow and to get smaller and smaller. That causes your blood circulation to be hindered. Your blood pressure goes up. Your pulse rate to get the heart to beat strong enough to get the blood through your veins goes up. And when that happens with a high pulse rate, that can cause your plaques to rupture, and that forms blood clots. Those clots obstruct the blood flow, which can lead to myocardial infarctions, a heart attack, where enough blood doesn't reach the heart, or an ischemic stroke that doesn't reach the brain. So in comes the bioactive compounds found in yellow, orange, and green fruits and vegetables, your carrots, your tomatoes, your broccoli, and your mangoes. And all of that's good. So they took a look at people 50 to 70, and they found that those who had the carotenes had better arteries using ultrasound imaging. The presence of atherosclerotic plaques in the carotid arteries were measured. Quote, the study concludes that the greater the concentration of carotenes in the blood, the lesser the atherosclerotic burden, particularly in women. Now, I've counseled a lot of women who've had weight problems, some overweight, some obese, some morbidly obese. And I've said it many times, I'll say it again. There is no such thing as being overweight and healthy. They're two diametrically opposite conditions. And I've gone through the details of what happens inside your body biochemistry when you're overweight. So when you lose weight, that's a good thing. And nobody should feel shame or beat up on themselves if they're overweight. Just get the support system you need, both psychological and physical, to lose weight in a healthy way. But then realize the fact that you've lost the weight does not mean, oh, I'm healthy. I can go back to eating what I want. No, it isn't, because you have not healed the arteries. That plaque is still there. So therefore, I don't want people thinking, oh, I've lost weight, I'm healthy. No, health is different than just losing weight. And for the next 1 to 2 years, depending upon how dedicated you are and focused, you've got to be on a strict protocol of getting rid of the plaque in the arteries. And you can do it. Dr. Dean Ornish did it in two separate landmark studies. He is an American medical hero. Unfortunately, the medical community did not follow his advice, even though he proved that it worked. So let's start taking at least to begin to clean up our arteries, especially the carotid artery. Take a glass of pomegranate concentrate, unsweetened each day. Take a glass of beet juice, unsweetened each day. Take coenzyme Q10, cayenne capsules, high heat unit. Take L-carnitine, magnesium, and calcium and potassium. Vitamin E and tocotrienols. That will help you, but it takes time. It generally takes 1 year if you really stick with it, but it might take 2 years if you're not disciplined. Okay? And we've got a real serious condition with diabetes. By the way, there's a legendary football player and baseball player. In fact, he was, talk about unique, he was inducted into the Baseball Hall of Fame and the Football Hall of Fame. Played for Atlanta and Falcons and, or no, Atlanta and also Dallas. Deion Sanders, he's now the head football coach out at Colorado. But he's got problems with neuropathy. And in no time did they mention the word diabetes. And they're looking at amputating. He's had toes already amputated. It's not difficult to overcome neuropathy. And it's certainly not difficult to overcome diabetes. But you got to be strict. And just a purely medical approach is not the approach I would advise. So if anyone wants to reach out to him, let him know there are other ways of reversing diabetes, protecting your circulatory system, overcoming neuropathy. He might want to do something about it. But not always. By the way, on a weekly basis, in my office in New York, we get emails and letters saying, hey, could you help Daniel Ellsberg? You know, once he acknowledged publicly that he had terminal cancer. We called him. We spoke on two occasions. They were not interested in the approach. That's fine. Rarely is someone who is famous, who has a disease, ever going to try alternative therapies, unless everything else they've tried is done, and they've been told there's nothing more we can do, put your life in order. Then we get the call, never at the beginning. And that's unfortunate. You have no idea, from Muhammad Ali to Magic Johnson. We've gotten the calls, but I tell them this. I've told a lot of very famous people this. If you're not willing to follow my protocol 100%, I'm not the person to work with, because I'm not going to have a protocol work, but you fail at it. And so that's where celebrities have no discipline, none. And you can understand why. Everybody's yes and, oh, how great, let's take a selfie and walk the red carpet. We're unworthy of it, but you are. And they start to believe that they're more important than what they are. So an average person, far more likely to be disciplined enough and focused enough to follow a protocol. So if we can help people, we will. And Jamie Foxx, I've got a question. I don't know why he had a medical emergency. I don't know what it is. They haven't told anyone yet. And some people have speculated, well, it's because, you know, vaccines. We don't know that. But I'm curious, why is it that his daughter or spokesperson has not come forward and said, with the medical doctors, and said, here's what his condition is now. Here's what brought him to the emergency room. And just tell us what it is. Why put people in a position of guessing? Because if you don't tell them what it is, you're going to have people speculating, especially with such a long recovery. So if he had a stroke, I don't know that he did, then just say he had a stroke. You can say he had a stroke, but we're absolutely 100% certain it wasn't from vaccine, and then you'd be lying, because there's no way to determine why a person has a stroke. That cannot be simply predicted. We can predict that you have a higher incidence of stroke if you took the vaccines. That we can say. A higher incidence, much higher incidence, of having a heart attack. In fact, I'm going to be dealing if you've had the vaccines. But people just should be open and honest about it. That's it on health and nutrition. We're going to take a break and come right back. Please stay with us. Welcome back, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. On the line with us now is our executive producer and a scholar in residence, Richard Gale. Now, Richard Gale worked for a substantial amount of his life within the biotech industries. He's very familiar with the how different vaccines and drugs are formulated. He has concern about this particular vaccine, and he wants to share what that concern is, especially as that particular RNA vaccine technology is now being applied towards all the newer vaccines and drugs as well. Nice to have you with us today, Richard.
Good day, Gary. Yes, I had some concerns after the previous time I was on the program and we were speaking about all the different adverse effects that are associated with the Pfizer and Moderna vaccines, when we stated that there were Pfizer's own records chronicled 10,000 different categories of adverse effects associated with these vaccines. And so I thought it would be important for people to have an understanding of what these vaccines, this mRNA vaccine is, and why Pfizer and Moderna did what they did in developing these vaccines. So people should just understand that RNA molecule is an unstable molecule. If I were to put RNA into some saline and I were to inject it into you and it's floating around in your bloodstream, it would probably last there for about 30 minutes, 60 minutes before your body would start, and the enzymes would start to break it down. So it's an unstable molecule. What Pfizer and Moderna had to do was they had to try to develop an RNA molecule that would code for the spike protein of the COVID virus that would be stable. And so I think understanding how they did that and why they did it would be very helpful for you to understand what these vaccines are and why they're causing all this damage that they are. So as you probably know, that RNA and DNA are both, they have building blocks, and those building blocks are these four amino acids, right? And so what Pfizer and Moderna did was they replaced one of those amino acids, uracil, with a synthetic molecule that's called, it was a synthetic form of uridine. It was called N1 methyl pseudouridine. And that was replaced, genetically used to replace all the uracil. So the RNA now is no longer just a natural RNA. It's a genetically modified synthetic RNA that will code for the spike protein. And then on top of that, to even make it more stable, they encapsulated it in a synthetic fat, a lipid nanoparticle, and that has a very long life in the body. It's very difficult for the body to be able to break down this fat globule that kind of contains this synthetic RNA. What that does is it enables the RNA to be more long-lasting, and so that it can evade the body's natural cellular destruction, as well as to give it enough integrity and robustness so that when it latches onto a cell in the body can repeatedly be making, using ourselves' own mechanisms to be able to continually repeatedly synthesize this synthetic RNA. So this is a completely synthetic artificial operation. Now, we know from the University of Copenhagen, from a published study, that they were drawing blood every week from vaccinated people, and they discovered that this mRNA, the synthetic mRNA, will last in the body for up to 30 days or more. So this is bad news, obviously, for vaccine safety perspective, because in regular vaccines, when you receive a regular vaccine with a killed virus, a live virus, or an attenuated virus, or just a viral, harmless viral protein, it will only remain in the body just several days. It's just enough that it lasts long enough for the body to generate an immune response. And then that vaccine material, that viral component, it's cleared by the reticuloendothelial system. But having a foreign genetic code on a lipid nanoparticle in the bloodstream for a month is a very now an eerie reality, because the implications are that all serious health events that occur within 30 days of the shot should be considered related to the vaccine unless it can be proven otherwise. That would be a good cautionary principle to follow, that for any kind of health events that occur within those 30 days should be considered as vaccine related unless proven otherwise. Second, that we now know that this mRNA, since it has a much longer lifespan, you could say, it has a prolonged opportunity to circulate through all the vital organs of the body, the heart, the brain, bone marrow, the adrenal glands, reproductive organs, which could cause so much more damage. An interesting study in Tokushima University in Japan, published in the journal Legal Medicine, there was a case of a 14-year-old Japanese girl who died after getting her third mRNA shot. And during the autopsy, they just found massive inflammation through virtually every organ that they examined in her body. So that thereby, with each successive shot, her body appeared to be becoming progressively primed to react more vigorously to the spike protein, which was producing these longer lasting effects from the vaccines. Third would be that our human body must not have the robust mechanisms to clear these vaccines. I mean, as you've seen with the other vaccines, regular vaccines, an RNA, naked RNA, the body can clear it very quickly. But here, our body's mechanism is unable to do so. So by the time a person's getting a second shot, there's still a lot left from the first shot in their system, which would explain the greater toxicity as you're getting more and more shots. And plus, on top of that, the mRNA generated, we know for a fact that this mRNA vaccine immunity is very weak. After 6 weeks, the immunity begins to wane already. And then the fifth concern would be that, and this is more hypothetical, but Peter McCullough states this, he's been on record stating this, and that's this shedding, this vaccine shedding. I mean, McCullough recommends that vaccinated people should not kiss, have close contact, or any sexual contact with a person, with anybody who's unvaccinated for 90 days. A long period of time. And then on top of then the final really deep concern that we should have over this is that they're now rapidly developing these new mRNA vaccines for influenza, the RSV virus, Zika, and others. And so there should be a call to put an immediately halt on any further development and certainly any approval of these vaccines until there's more greater discovery on what these vaccines are actually doing. Okay, Gary? Well,
yes, thank you. We appreciate these insights, Richard. And the simple reality is that none of this will mean anything because the power of the people who control the pharmaceutical industry, control public health policy at the CDC, is so corrupt that I see everything going full speed ahead, creating another pandemic, another emergency use, and nothing happens to them. It's up to the people to say no, because what you just shared with us, Richard, should be a written statement given to every single person with proper informed consent. You want to get your vaccine? I'm a pharmacist. I'm a nurse. I'm a doctor. Here is what you should read and understand it. You understand that this can be happening in your body. Oh, and also here's another informed consent. Here's what we now know could be myocarditis or affecting your reproductive glands. Until that's done, until the American public demands accountability, information that's objective and unbiased and honest, real science, then we're going to continue down this road, and that's unfortunate. Thanks for your input, Richard.
Okay.
Now, we're going to go from there as how did we get here? How do we get to where approximately more or less, my guess, about half of Americans no longer trust the government? They certainly don't trust the judicial system. They don't trust the Justice Department. They see the two-tiered system. They don't trust the media when every morning and every afternoon, every evening, you have panels of people coming together, all saying the same identical thing, as if there's no original thinking. And all they're doing is attacking. All they do is attack, attack, attack. I don't see anything constructive being done by them to help the average person, and instead trying to propagandize at every segment. So here is someone speaking out against this. And she's an academic. She's a feminist, has been for her entire adult life. Professor Paglia, let's hear what she has to say, because she's going to give us some understanding of how do we get to where everything is about wokeism, everything is about identity politics, everything is about critical race theory, everything is about you obey us or we're going to destroy you. We don't want discussion. We don't want you to have freedom of speech. We don't want to hear what you have to say. And you're not to challenge anything we're doing, no matter how insane it might be. Okay, this had to come from someplace. Here's just one person's view. You can agree or disagree with it, but let's go to her now.
All right, the universities are an absolute wreck, okay? You know, right now. They're pygmies. I'm telling you, they are passive worms. You, as a man, you cannot possibly know what I'm talking about because you can talk.
In a time when more and more students on college campuses are demanding political correctness from those around them, how have faculty responded? Reason TV's editor-in-chief Nick Gillespie sat down with college professor, author, and social critic Camille Paglia at Reason Weekend to talk about that, as well as feminism, Prince's career, Beyonce's Lemonade album, and more.
Let's get started here. Part of what we're talking about this weekend at Reason is kind of the state of the university, and you know, what is the university over as a meaningful place, as a site of new cultural production and knowledge? And we're going to be talking, you know, about students and the way students are controlled. But can you talk a little bit? How do you feel about the state of the university from the professor's point of view? Are professors, particularly in the arts and the humanities and the social sciences, are they bringing what they should be bringing to research universities?
The universities are an absolute wreck, okay? You know, right now, because for decades, okay, any graduate student in the humanities who had independent thinking, okay, was driven out. Okay, there was no way to survive without memorizing all of these stupid bromides with this reverential bowing to these overinflated figures like Lacan, Derrida, Foucault, and so on. Basically, it's been a tyranny in the humanities because the professors who are now of my age, who are the baby boom professors, who made their careers on the back of Foucault and so on, are determined, okay, that survive. And so you have a kind of vampirism going on. But I've been getting letters. For 25 years since Sexual Personae was released in 1990 from refugees from the graduate schools. Okay, so it's been a terrible loss. One of my favorite letters was early on. A woman wrote to me who she was painting houses in St. Louis, and she said that she had wanted a career as a literature professor and had gone into the graduate program, comparative literature, at Berkeley. And finally, she was forced to drop out because she said every time she would express enthusiasm for a work they were studying in the seminar, everyone would look at her as if she had in some way created a terrible error of taste. I thought, oh my God, okay. That's what's been going on, is that a certain sort of a pretentious style of superiority to the text, and every text, of course, is supposed to be dissolving itself. Okay? So it's all self-reflexive. At the end, nothing means anything, and the professors believe that they have some, that this is an accomplishment to reduce great works of art to nothing. Graduate training has been systematically removing from the grad students the one thing you need as a teacher in the undergraduate classroom: enthusiasm, passion, conviction, okay? An independent point of view.
So one of the things she mentioned, letters, I highly recommend, if you don't, read her, I guess it's weekly column at Salon, where Camilla's been an advice columnist for 20 years or so.
It began as Spy magazine.
Along with, I think, Andrew W.K., who is a musician and motivational speaker in the Village Voice, these are the two great advice columnists, like forget Ann Landers, forget Dear Abby, and the range of topics that you cover, and it's really a fantastic thing.
When Spy magazine announced my debut in Agony Aunt column, Ask Neil, it was on the same cover that they had the great Hillary Clinton dominatrix cover. Okay, so it's been fantastic. There's Hillary Clinton in the White House, the Oval Office desk in a dominatrix outfit, and then there's a band and Camille Paglia debut Agony Aunt.
So what needs to change?
We've been joined to the hip.
Or what can change in the university to bring that back in?
Because rebellion by the grad students. This is what I'm trying to foment. Mm-hmm. Okay, we absolutely need someone to stand up, okay, and start criticizing authority figures. But no, okay, this generation of young people have been trained throughout middle school and high school and college, okay, to be subservient to authority. There is no question of authority or whatever. They want an expansion of authority. Everything of my generation stood against. Okay? We drove the administrators out of our private lives, out of the in loco parentis mode. And now today's kids have been raised in a helicopter parent fashion. They feel warm and cozy. Okay, by additional expansion of authority of these Budinsky. Okay, people. I mean, these mediocrities who like the bureaucrats who infest university. University life has become increasingly unpalatable because of this, thanks to federal regulations, forcing the adding on and adding on and adding on of more layers of bureaucracy. It's a nightmare, an outrage, and none of the faculty have fought back. Now, they pretend to be leftists, okay? No, they're pygmies. Okay, I'm telling you, they are passive worms, okay? Not to fight back against the bureaucrats.
So talk a bit about, in the 60s, I mean, there's that great moment in Berkeley with the free speech movement, which started when students, and I guess it was a grad student, stood up and protested at Berkeley in the 60s, unless you were an official member of the Democratic or Republican students groups, you couldn't leaflet. And that's what the free speech movement was actually about just handing out all sorts of literature. Where do you see, is there going to be that, who is going to be, the university's tank man in Tiananmen Square carrying his shopping bags and standing up?
Well, there has to be a rollback. The faculty has been absolutely servient, okay, to this mad overgrowth of authority. I wrote a piece in 1992 called The Nursery School Campus that was very prophetic. Okay, it was in the Times Literary Supplement in England. And they queried me when the article was in press, and they said, what is this dean of students thing that you refer to? I said, you don't have a dean of students? They said, no. I said, well, what do you have? It turns out, okay, at Oxford and Cambridge, okay, there was practically no administrative bureaucracy of any kind. They said, oh, we do have the man who runs the cafeteria, okay, et cetera. So the provosts and the heads of everything are like drawn from the faculty, and then when they're done with that position, they go back to the faculty. So what's happened, which is extremely pernicious and toxic in American universities over the last 35 to 40 years, okay, is this growth of a massive administrator class who had never had any teaching experience whatever, and regard themselves as a master race, and I am not kidding, okay, all right, and they force you into every kind, there's all kinds of formulas you have to follow, to deal with the students, and every kind of regulation and law, okay, and they're a bunch of nervous Nellies, et cetera, okay, it's an outrage, and there is no, the faculty has been reduced, okay, to slave status, they're serfs, and from coast to coast here, it's an absolute outrage. And again, all these people pretending, like Judith Butler, these people pretending to be leftists, okay, and then in being paid, $500,000 over the yearly salaries, and having with their armies of editorial assistants and people running. The corruption has been untouched by the major media. Why? Why? Because all these graduates of the elite schools go and get jobs at the New York Times. Okay, that's why.
Talk, so there's definitely that bureaucratic encroachment on all sorts of university life.
Tremendous.
Talk, you mentioned Foucault, Derrida, Lacan, and it's interesting, Jacques Lacan is a French psychoanalyst who actually was the hero of a 1978 Reason cover story called France's New Anti-Statist Philosopher. I did not discover that when I was in grad school. I would have loved, it would have made all the Lacanians at SUNY Buffalo cry themselves to sleep to know that Reason had something good about him. But what is, and these are very different guys with different ideas, but what is the kind of overall message or idea that they were giving that has made, do you think that has led to a conformity of thought among professors?
Well, the number one error of Lacan, Derrida, Foucault, and so on, okay, is that language structures everything. There is no reality. There is knowledge is not possible, okay, without language. And I'm thinking, this entire, all these decades of crap pouring out of these elite schools based on this stupid idea. I've been teaching in art schools, okay, my entire career. Excuse me, my dancers are totally inarticulate. Okay? That's not how they perceive the world. Okay, they express it, they process the world through the body.
Maybe they just didn't have the right English teacher.
No. That is not how my ceramicists do not process the world. Anyone who works with their hands is not processing reality through language. Okay, it's all based on an outmoded linguistics of Saussure. Okay, it's absolute nonsense. Okay, right from the start, there are different parts of the brain. These people, they're all scientific illiterates, okay, which is why there's no biology, okay, as a required element in women's studies. Which wouldn't you think, when you're putting together a women's studies program, that the first thing would be that any graduate of that program would need to have one course, maybe, in biology to study endocrinology and hormones? No, okay, and so on. It's all language. And that's why gender is nothing but language, you see? Okay, right? So we're entering this transgender nightmare, okay? All we hear is transgender, because they honestly believe that gender is not grounded in the body. They have absolutely no scientific knowledge, okay, these people in the humanities.
That was just part of a discussion, but she brings some common sense and reason as a major academic and a major feminist, one of the few feminists who've lasted for 40 years. The other one is Naomi Wolf, and now Naomi Wolf is anti-feminist establishment. She feels that the feminist establishment has betrayed women. Just the idea that now a small group of people can call regular women, biological women, cis women. And if you don't use the word cis, somehow you're xenophobic. This is so immature. How can you have a conversation with someone who doesn't understand basic biology? Now, your choice of what to do with your biology, that's your right, that's your business. I'm not arguing that, nor would any reasonable person. But then you start making it mandatory. Then you want to punish people. Then you want to see people hurt. You want to see people censored, destroyed. No, the silent majority is standing up and speaking out. Well, they tried to silence Tucker Carlson. And for a moment, they succeeded. But then his first broadcast, small, short one, on Twitter had, first it was 20 million, then 80 million, then 120 million. That's never been done in broadcast history. That dwarfs Joe Rogan. There, in fact, if you put all the cable systems together, all as one, including Fox, it doesn't account for what he's doing with each one of his broadcasts. So he's reaching people. And he also is reaching those who at one time were hardcore liberals who were excluded because the truth they were telling and the lies they were not supporting. And for that was unforgivable to all the liberal radio media, which is 99% of it. And so they stood up. They had no platforms. This one, of course, they have. But now he's opened himself up to listen to what they had to say. And this is about Robert Kennedy, and it's about HOTES, the person that I invited on this program to debate me. He's a scientist, fine. He's a medical doctor. I'm a PhD. But then let's see what he has to say and what I have to say based upon my capacity as investigative journalist to look for the truth. Because no one, not a single person in the mainstream media, was willing to challenge him time and time again. And everything he was saying, we can now disprove. Vaccines, no. Masks, no. The PCR test, no. Quarantining, no. Children getting double vaccinated, no. You're wrong, wrong, wrong with deadly outcomes. But you would never know that from the mainstream media. Here's Tucker Carlson last night talking about Robert Kennedy Jr.
Hey, it's Tucker Carlson. There's never been a candidate for president the media hated more than Robert F. Kennedy Jr. You thought that title belonged to Donald Trump. Of course, it must. But go check the coverage. Trump got a gentle scalp massage by comparison when he announced. When Trump rolled out his presidential campaign in 2015, the New York Times waited until the 17th paragraph of the story to attack him. But as well-known as he is, the paper said at the time, Trump is also widely disliked. And then they cited a poll to back it up. That was the attack on Trump. 8 years later, the Times attacked Bobby Kennedy in the very first sentence of the story. Quote, Robert F. Kennedy Jr., the paper declared, announced a presidential campaign on Wednesday built on relitigating COVID-19 shutdowns and shaking Americans' faith in science. Shaking Americans' faith in science. Imagine if you're an ordinary New York Times subscriber reading that over coffee in your pre-war rent-controlled duplex on Columbus Avenue. You'd think Bobby Kennedy just declared war on the Enlightenment. My fellow Americans, I have come to shake your faith in science. Join me as I drag our nation back to the medieval period. You'd be appalled. CBS News viewers likely were appalled. In its coverage of Kennedy's announcement, CBS denounced the candidate's views as, quote, misleading and dangerous. The LA Times called him a threat to democracy. At the offices of National Public Radio in Washington, a full-blown Category 5 hysteria typhoon broke out. NPR devoted an entire segment to savaging Kennedy, not just as a candidate, but as a human being. NPR described him as someone who, for his own perverse reasons, has made, quote, debunked and false and misleading claims that undermine trust in vaccines, and who, in his spare time, provides moral support to crazed extremists who, quote, rally under the banner of what they call liberty or freedom. People magazine didn't even bother to report a single word of anything Kennedy said at his announcement, and instead wrote an entire story about how his relatives hate him. Kennedy's younger sister, Carrie, the magazine reported solemnly, does not approve of Bobby Jr.'s harmful views. His harmful views! Bobby Kennedy's thoughts alone are evil enough to hurt people. That's been the tone of the media coverage around Bobby Kennedy Jr. for the past 18 years, since July of 2005. That's the moment that Kennedy published a magazine article suggesting there might be a link between the rise in diagnosed autism cases and the ever-expanding schedule of mandatory childhood vaccines. The day that story was published, Kennedy's reporting was considered so solid that two outlets ran it simultaneously, Rolling Stone and Salon.com. Unfortunately, neither one of them understood what they were up against. The pharma lobby rolled out the most ferocious public relations campaign in memory, and both publications swiftly caved. Both pulled the story and then disavowed it, groveling as they did. No one in the national media bothered to explain why autism diagnoses had skyrocketed. If it wasn't the vaccines, and maybe it wasn't, then what was it? To this day, there has not been a convincing explanation. Instead, reporters just attack Bobby Kennedy. They've called him a lunatic and a Nazi. Instagram shut down his account. YouTube just last week pulled down a perfectly reasonable interview he did with Jordan Peterson, citing unspecified misinformation, and so on. Kennedy became the most censored famous person in the United States. At this point, most Americans have heard a lot more about Bobby Kennedy Jr. than they've heard from him. He doesn't get many offers to speak from big platforms. But last week, Joe Rogan gave him one. Here's some of what he said.
Why do five of my seven kids have allergies? You know, and of course, we know why. Because aluminum adjuvants give you allergies. They're designed to make you, you know, to create a hyperimmune response to foreign particles. And the last category is, yeah, the allergic diseases, peanut allergies, food allergies, eczema, which I never knew anybody with eczema when I was a kid. I never, asthma, I knew people with asthma. But it wasn't one in every four black kids like it is today. So, you know, all of those things. Now, we went from 6% of Americans having chronic disease. By 1986, we're starting to add the vaccines, and we got and 11.8% of kids now, so it's doubled.
Why do five of my seven children have allergies? Now, we don't know the answer, of course, but it's an interesting question. In fact, it's an important question that deserves an adult answer, not that you should hold your breath waiting to get one. Bobby Kennedy asks a lot of questions like that. He notices things. Kennedy pays attention to the world around him, and he wonders why it's changing. He's an outdoorsman, a falconer, and a fly fisherman. He's interested in how nature works. He's curious. Not so long ago, these qualities were considered essential to the practice of science. All scientific discovery comes from observation, empiricism, patient watching. Without the willingness to put aside your pre-assumptions and assess with honesty the things you see and touch and smell, the changes taking place right in front of your face, you can't do science. You can't create art either, or journalism, or theology. You have to be willing to notice the obvious. And when they tell you you're not allowed to notice the obvious, you should be concerned. Imagine you're on a commercial airline flight. The plane is just leveled out at 37,000 feet. You're closing your eyes for a nap. And suddenly you smell smoke. And it's not your imagination. You can see it. It's starting to fill the cabin. All around you, people are hacking and choking. The guy in the next seat has a napkin pressed against his mouth. And he's mumbling what sounds like Psalm 23. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death. So clearly, the airplane is on fire. But almost unbelievably, no one has said a word about it. Not a single person is acknowledging this is happening. Everyone is silent. So in panic, you yell for the flight attendant. There's smoke in the cabin, you say, as if she hasn't noticed. But she stares at you with hard eyes. Shut up, racist, she replies. That's a dangerous Russian conspiracy theory. Stop spreading misinformation or I'll call TSA and have you arrested when we land. That sounds like a fever dream, but it's also pretty close to the experience of living in the United States at the moment. All around you, things seem to be fraying and getting worse. Your gut tells you there's something very bad going on, and all the evidence suggests that there is. But the people in charge won't acknowledge that. Everything's fine, they scream. Stop noticing! But wait! I don't remember this many kids having allergies or asthma or eczema or autism or, for that matter, body dysmorphia. And why so many suicides? What's going on here? Shut up! Stop asking questions! That's their answer. But Bobby Kennedy won't stop asking, and that's why they hate him. As Kennedy spoke on the Rogan show, a reporter for Vice.com called Anna Merlin was watching. Merlin was so enraged by what she saw that she dashed off an article attacking Joe Rogan's employer for allowing the conversation to take place. Spotify has stopped even sort of trying to stem Joe Rogan's vaccine misinformation, read the headline. The piece never even described much of what Bobby Kennedy had actually said. Merlin dismissed the entire interview as, quote, a detailed survey of Kennedy's most dangerously incorrect views, a far too extensive list to outline in full. In other words, we here at Vice don't have time to describe all of Bobby Kennedy's lies, but trust us, they were lies. Then Merlin called Spotify to see if she could get the episode censored. Much to her profound frustration, Spotify refused to censor the episode and kept the interview on its website. So she spent the next several days ranting about all of this on Twitter. People were listening to the wrong things, and Anna Merlin was mad about it. So was Peter Hotez. Hotez is a pediatrician from Texas who became moderately famous on MSNBC during the COVID lockdowns as a Biden shill and a vaccine promoter. Hotez read Anna Merlin's piece and then huffily retweeted it. Effectively, why is Bobby Kennedy allowed to talk in public? And that gave Joe Rogan an idea. Why not have Peter Hotez debate Bobby Kennedy on his show? You claim he's wrong. Why don't you explain why he's wrong? That seemed fair. But Hotez wouldn't bite. So Rogan offered to give $100,000 to Hotez's favorite charity if he agreed to come on. Soon others made their own pledges and the pot swelled to over $1 million. But still, Peter Hotez wouldn't come. Instead, he scampered back to MSNBC, where one of the channel's oilier hosts assured him he was doing the right thing by dodging the debate. Arguing with Bobby Kennedy is morally equivalent to debating a Holocaust denier, the host said. No decent person would do that. And of course, Hotez agreed. Quote, 200,000 Americans needlessly perished because they believed the anti-vaccine disinformation and refused to take a COVID shot. So really, talking to Bobby Kennedy would be a lot like abetting murder. And Peter Hotez, MD, PhD, was not going to do that. But wait a second, you ask yourself. Let's think about those numbers. 200,000 people died because of vaccine disinformation from Bobby Kennedy and people like him? How do we know that? Is that really science? No, it's not science. Because we don't know that. We can't know that. There is no way to know that. Peter Hotez's claim is a political attack posing as science, and he specializes in those. Here he is on television during the so-called pandemic.
It's all about mass compliance. That's going to be absolutely critical, because if you don't have masks, remember, this virus aerosolizes, so even 6 feet is not enough. It can go 17, 18 feet, several meters. What we really have to do is have vaccine mandates in the schools. We should have a rule that anyone who walks into a school over the age of 12 has to be vaccinated. This is the nature of the anti-vaccine movement in this country. It's somehow married now to far right-wing extremism and white nationalist group.
Anyone who's unvaccinated and has been lucky enough to escape COVID, your luck is about to run out.
And I call it anti-science aggression coming from Senator Rand Paul, Senator Johnson, members of the House of Representatives, in addition to those two senators, are killers.
It's all about mask compliance. We must have vaccine mandates for children. Take the vax or you will die. Anyone who disagrees with me is a white nationalist and a killer and probably an agent of Putin. Do we say probably? Let's revise that. Certainly an agent of Putin. Again, here is Dr. Peter Hotez.
We're starting to see now those same anti-vaccine messages that's coming out of the U.S. And now we're finding it in Africa and Latin America. And remember, what the other reason we're seeing this is the Putin government has, and this has been reported by U.S. and British intelligence, has been piling on with this whole systematic program of what's being called weaponized health communications, trying to destabilize democracies with anti-vaccine, anti-science messages and targeting.
So according to British and U.S. intelligence, anyone who disagrees with Dr. Peter Hotez is a disloyal American working to destabilize our democracy on behalf of Vladimir Putin. Now, by comparison, never in his life has Bobby Kennedy Jr. said anything half that demented. But keep in mind, Peter Hotez claims to have a valid medical license. He is allowed to treat patients. After a while, even MSNBC viewers were going to have some questions about a guy who talks like that, and apparently some of them did. As the lockdowns wore on, the population started to notice that many of the core claims the TV doctors were making were untrue. You'd only need one shot. If you got the shot, you would never get sick. You would never pass the virus to others, and so on. They said these things, as you know, again and again. Ultimately, they were proven wrong, but they never admitted it. They just attacked the people who noticed. Here's Dr. Peter Hotez calling for the Biden administration to arrest anyone who questions the COVID vaccine.
The Biden administration has to realize that anti-science is a killer. Disinformation. Yeah. It's not even just disinformation. This is an anti-science empire right now, and we need Homeland Security. We need the Justice Department. We've really got to figure this out. And Health and Human Services will not be able to figure this out on their own.
It's not a medical problem. It's a law enforcement problem. They've doubted me. Arrest them. It's a horrifying outburst if you think about it. If you were on tape saying something like that, you would be deeply ashamed. But Peter Hotez is not ashamed. He's become even more grandiose. Hotez has written a self-congratulatory new book called The Deadly Rise of Anti-Science, A Scientist's Warning, as if you were a scientist. Here's how Hotez describes himself in the book's promotional literature. Quote, "During the height of the COVID-19 pandemic, one renowned scientist in his famous bow tie, appearing daily on major news networks such as MSNBC, NPR, and BBC, and others, Dr. Peter J. Hotez often went without sleep, working around the clock to develop a nonprofit COVID-19 vaccine and to keep the public informed. During that time, he was one of the most trusted voices on the pandemic and was even nominated for a Nobel Peace Prize for his selfless work. He also became one of the main targets of anti-science rhetoric that gained traction through conservative news media." End quote. Though we could go on. So here you have.
Well, you're getting the message. They're doing everything humanly possible to stop Robert F. Kennedy from having any form. Now, you can agree or disagree with Kennedy, but at least hear him out, debate him. If you think he's wrong, prove he's wrong, because he hasn't had a real debate in 16 years. He does his homework. So let's just see these so-called experts where they all join together and argue about someone's credibility and then try to destroy them. And then all the other hosts on all the other shows join in. It's coordinated. They don't want someone in office they can't control. They don't want that. Okay. But it took Tucker Carlson to bring that out. You can agree or disagree on other issues, and I certainly disagree on a lot of issues with Tucker Carlson, but I'm glad he's out there because he's reaching about 100 million people, more than any person's ever reached in the history of media, with a single show. How about that? So the more the real honest people get on there, the more we can start to change things. So at least it's a voice, one more voice, and we need all the voices that we can get. I want to say goodbye to WBI. They got to go to the news. Now, we're going to finish off today. First, if you have something you'd like to share about what we've shared with you, please call in. Our talkback number is 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. But I also want to mention that coming up in 2.5 months from now, we're going to be doing a health retreat. This is a fundraiser for WBAI. And if it interests you, you'll be able to call Luann, say, yeah, I'm interested. We always fill up. And it's one of the most beautiful, spectacular places, one of the healthiest places in America to be, one of the most de-stressing places, relaxing places. Energy work is done. Lots of good lectures and workshops. Luann's number is 903-881-7008. 903-881-7008. And let's go to the couple people who were just at the last retreat.
And I'm finishing up 2 weeks in the anti-aging group, and I feel so fortunate to have come to Gary's Villa. It is beautiful here, trees and grass and flowers and bushes and animals, the peacocks, the donkeys, the chickens, the hens. It's just marvelous being right here with animals. I learned a lot. There's been a lot of wisdom and information passed on by Gary, Luann, and the presenters. The volunteers have been wonderful. The food is marvelous. I personally got a very unique experience. I've been carrying around a lot of baggage from the past, and I know I've been wanting to let it go, but have not been able to. In Peter Resnick's workshop, I was able to actually let it go. I was crying. I could feel the physical sensation of letting go of all the past that I've been carrying around with me. And I'm going to start crying now because it's amazing. So I'm so thankful to Gary and all the staff here. I highly, highly, highly recommend that you guys come.
Hi, my name is Jan Ford, and I'm so excited to have spent 2 weeks here in God's Green Acre. Gary Noll has been a gift to the world for quite a long time. He has written so many books and has helped so many people with not only different illnesses, but their mindset. So starting with the mindset and changing your mind and getting rid of all the garbage in your life, setting your priorities, having wonderful nutrition was what we did for 2 weeks. The staff is outstanding. There is no place on this earth that is as comprehensive as what Gary Noll has put together. You have your mind, your body, your social relationships, and your exercise all in one package. So coming to Gary Noll's ranch has been life-changing, life gifts, and life tools that you will use for the rest of your life, not only for you, but to extend it to your family and friends so that we can change this world. That's what the world needs. And if you want to have something that you can hold, something tangible that you can use in your life, this is the best place to come. I love nature, and I feel the connection between God, nature, and the wonderful people who I've had the privilege of being around. There is nothing like it and has changed my life, and I'm going to go back and change the lives of others. Thank you.
Well, there you just have a few people. It's kind of, it works this way. There are a lot of good places in this country, a lot of good places in New York State to go. There's monasteries, there's farms and relax, and some are in silence where you just meditate and have a Spartan diet, and that's very healing. Other places that's more active and more social, but then there's something completely different. It's based upon healing energy. It's based upon looking at the food you're eating, the juices you're drinking, and knowing what that's going to do for your body. And that's what this does. So if you want to be a part of an exceptional week or two, it's going to be in mid-September, then give Luann a call at 903-881-7008. The only thing we ask is if you are if you're a very negative person, or you're very critical, or you're very judgmental, or you're a perfectionist, and nothing's ever going to be right, this is not the place for you. There are other places that you'd be fine with, because we engage in some, we engage in laughter, we have fun, we relax ourselves. There's a sense of ease in this environment, and a lot of people, they just, they're not ready for that, especially New Yorkers, especially. Anyhow, we're out of time. Thank you all for listening, and have a nice day. Stay tuned for Utrecht's Lead.